might.
I know.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful outside, but I hate too much sun. I don't know, California always confuses me. I'm like so fresh, you know, I still breathe European air and I am in a way dreaming that I'm still there, but obvious, I'm also happy to sit like every Monday for the last 4 years in the same chair. A very comfortable one, and in front of my computer screen, and just meeting amazing, amazing guests. Because today we have Accent On with your host, Ilona Europa, who, like I said, still misses her own country. I'm from Poland originally. Hopefully people remember that. But also, I'm so, so excited to start, like, with new energy, my own show, because the lineup of guests that I have for today and next and next and next weeks are really, really very, very cool and very unusual. But, you know, what can I say? I have the in front of me somebody very, very, very special. And it, like every woman who just see very good-looking men, I'm thinking, wow, not so many great-looking guys like that walking on the streets. And I think that's what every woman will think about, and I'm not lying. He's amazing, good-looking man. And but that's only, oh, that's a lot maybe, but most important, his brain is bigger than life. And I'm so afraid to almost interview him to just show our listeners how interesting this human being is. But you know what? That's Ilona Europa. Sometimes I just need to fight my own fight. I introduced to people very, very great guy, and I need to just hopefully bring everything what is so special about him in 50 minutes. And if we love him and he love us, he will be back. Then, okay, it's very magical introduction, but time maybe for your name. Hi, what is your name?
Hi, Ilona. My name is Joshua Crow.
Okay, Joshua. Hopefully you don't mind. Hopefully a lot of people tell you that you're a really great-looking guy.
I appreciate it.
Do people really tell you that? There's nothing wrong with this.
I have been told that before.
You were?
I have, yeah.
Oh, God, thank you. Phew! If not, I would be the one. No. Obviously, you are an actor.
I have done some acting.
Which means this helps. I know. You need to have the it. When you are an actor, everybody tells you, oh, you need to have the it factor. Something very special. And I really believe that so strong presence really, really helps on a stage. Do you agree?
Yeah, it absolutely does. An actor has to kind of command the audience, and he has to have a sort of charisma that makes people fall in love with him or her and really care about their fate.
You are right. But to narrow you down to describing you as an actor, that's like maybe 10% of your life. Do you agree?
Sure, yeah, probably less.
You know, and what really, really is amazing about you, and I just went to your website. Hopefully people went to Accent On the Facebook, and they will be downloading this show. A lot of people will be downloading, listening over and over the show. Oh, we have another guest. Come on over. Okay. Oh, Karolina Naziemiec, she's our guest who, I think, did you? Yeah, come on. Yeah. You were once here or twice?
Once.
Only once. Okay, put the headphones on. You are probably number three. Okay, let you. Hi, Karolina Naziemiec.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me closer to the microphone?
Okay.
Okay, I will make you a little bit louder.
One second. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Karolina, thank you for introducing me to the very, very special gentleman. We both will be fighting him, to make him just describe his greatness, because the great people don't like to talk about themselves. But I really think we both girls, we need to just do our job.
Yes, and we'll just make him.
Yeah, how do you know him? How do you know Joshua?
Well,
oh, I met him yesterday.
Not yesterday, but last month.
Okay.
I met just last month, and he came to the Polish community to introduce his play. Mm-hmm. And actually, at that very event, I was playing on stage.
Okay, you are. Can you remind people? You
yes.
are a singer. You are
I'm
also.
I'm a singer, and I'm also a violist. So I was playing a classical trio that time, and that's how it started. Artist people, I guess, like to
help each other. I just love this about us. I really, really do. I'm so thankful that you introduced me to Joshua, because when I started reading his bio and his life story, I was saying he's a perfect guest. Not saying that we...
Not a boring person
Not
at all.
A boring. And Karolina, obviously, you have a Polish... you are a Polish person, Polish girl. I am a Polish girl. And I think we are... Okay, successful in America, as what will be defining success in a moment with Joshua, which I told him, if we make money making living of what we love to do, that's already success in America, and hopefully he agree with us. But yes, I'll come back to you. We have two songs that we'll be playing. One is 6 minutes long. I'm like, what
I
the?
Know.
I know, summertime, we want summertime to be
exactly.
long.
Exactly, I was thinking about that.
Okay, you know, then, okay, if I fade out like a little earlier, people don't be angry at
just
me.
Purchase a CD.
Go and yeah, purchase CD and yes, yeah. That's good. Coming back to you, Joshua, one more time. How we spell your name?
Sorry, my first name?
Second.
Last name is Crone.
Oh. Then, as a young gentleman, 15 years old gentleman, did you ever think that being maybe 20 years older, right now, or whatever, that your life will be as is right now?
I think at that age, I was thinking more about girls than about anything else. But,
we like that.
But maybe a year or two before that, I had an obsession with Walt Disney, and I wanted to become an animator and move out to Burbank. And so I think I saw myself ending
stop,
up here
stop,
just
stop,
a lot
stop.
Sooner.
That's very interesting. When you were 13, you had a dream to become animator.
And then puberty hit, and I forgot all that stuff.
Healthy, thank you. You know, that's good for mommy and daddy. Probably they were like, yes, you know. Okay, but you didn't forget about what will be the next. Then let's skip this 15 years old. What happened when you finished your high school?
So after high school, I was set to go to Florida State and study computer science, and I didn't want to go. So I enlisted in the Marine Corps. And they sent me to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and four years of service in the Marines. That was the next thing after high school.
I hope that people understand the way how Joshua will be dealing with us. You know, I will give him an answer, and he will just skip for the amazing stuff. I'm like, okay, that's what happened. Oh, okay, but you said you tried to study very, very smart, you know, department. You would try to be an engineer. Why Florida? Why you wanted to do something with computer? You think you were directed by parents to become just...
So my dad is he's a programmer. He's a specialist in artificial intelligence. I grew up programming.
And could so you was, repeat that? Daddy, hi, we love you and your brain. Again, what daddy was doing?
So he's a programmer. He's a specialist in artificial intelligence. He developed an algorithm called simulated annealing. He worked on a couple of solutions for problems kind of like the traveling salesman problem, where you're trying to find the shortest path from point A to point B. And some of his solutions were put into practice in, like, the Star Wars missile defense system. He was working on that in the 80s. And later he was working on optimizing train systems in the U.S., like freight trains. And now he's kind of in semi-retirement.
We will never know about your daddy. Thank you for introducing. What is his name?
His name is Michael.
Hi, Michael. Nice to meet you. And you have a brother?
I have a brother, Jonathan, yes.
And brother is a musician, yes?
He's a musician. He's a very successful one, in fact.
Yes. And do you see him often?
I don't see him often. I've spent most of my adult life in Europe, so I've only really seen my family once every few years. It's on average.
Oh, and you were born where?
I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay. Did you like that?
Well, I don't remember because we moved away when I was a year old, and then it was like upstate New York, okay. Central Pennsylvania, and finally Florida, where I went to high school. That answers your question about why Florida. We've come full circle.
You see, that's your life is amazing because you have lots of these things going around. And okay, then you said, no more studying for me. I want to see the world. And okay, see the world. Some people will take backpack and they will just decide saying bye to mommy. See you in 1 year or something. But you chose Marine. This is not like easy to be a Marine. I had my daughter's ex-boyfriend. He was chosen to be a Marine. And I know it takes special human and to become one. Do you think you had something special about you that they wanted you there?
There's a military tradition in my family. So we definitely had that. I was raised very patriotic. And I wanted to sort of be challenged as much as possible. I wanted to be a part of, the toughest and the best team out there. And that was...
Oh, my gosh, we fall in love more and more with Joshua. Joshua, you're saying the right things after people's ears because really, you are really very, very special. I'm not saying because your life story is a very elegant one. You know, it's a very elegant one. You are using words like, you know, I'm proud to be an American. I wanted to be the best that I can. I wanted to travel and I chose this path. This is not easy path. Everybody understand that it wasn't like easy. It's a very hard how many years?
It was 4 years.
4 years in your life. And when it comes to physical needs to be good Marine, you needed to be good one. What did you do there?
So the first year, well, it was a little ironic because I joined the Marines partly to see the world, and so I requested overseas service, and then they stuck me on Guantanamo Bay for a year, which it's like a small town somewhere in the Midwest. When I was there, there weren't any camps for terrorists or anything like that. This was back in 93, 94. And then the camp or the base started filling up with Cuban refugees. It was a situation called the Cuban Raptor Crisis, where Castro let everybody leave the country they wanted to go, and we had tens of thousands of people living in camps on that small base in Guantanamo Bay, and they started rioting, and there was a whole series of incidents. So we were kind of active in that. Then I got sent to California. I was stationed at Camp Pendleton for a couple of years. That was my first contact with California. I absolutely loved it. I was in infantry the whole time. I was boat company, trained as an assault climber out in Joshua Tree National Park. We deployed for 6 months to Japan. I spent a little time in Russia, in Vladivostok, and Korea. Trained with the Rock Marines there, and then we came back here. I got my discharge, and off I went to Europe.
Okay. I mean, I was thinking after all these travels when you were a Marine, there was enough for you. But then you're like, okay, I did this, that's discharge, and now I want to go to Europe. How fast you told me that and to tell to everybody. It's like everything comes out from your mouth easy. Couldn't be so easy. The decision were easy, and doing was easy. You just decided and like, okay, next month you took the backpack and bye again?
I'm pretty impulsive, yes.
You are impulsive.
So
4 years in Marine, that's not impulsive. That's pretty, you know, steady 4 years in your life that you practically, you might be getting there. It was impulsive, but staying, that's 4 years of your life. And then did you have an idea what would be the next chapter? Just travel? That's all what you wanted?
Well, no. At that point, while I was still in the Marines, I had gotten really interested in theater. I had started writing plays. I was actually taking some acting classes my last year in at Saddleback College in Mission Viejo. And I had an idea that I wanted to eventually be a playwright. I didn't really know how you go about becoming one. Yeah. I didn't think it was a good idea to actually study playwriting. I felt like it's better to have a lot of experience of the world so that you have things to write about rather than a lot of academic knowledge that you can't really fill with content. So that was always in the back of my head to sort of develop as a person so that I would be a better writer.
That's a very philosophical of you, because this is your point of view, and obviously a lot of people, especially teachers, they will not agree with you what you said right now. They will say, no, study, learn from a lot of people. But you're like, oh, I prefer to see, I need to have something to write about. I agree with you 100%. I don't want to compare my life to your life, because it's for sure not the same, but in half of my life, I never, like I said, ask myself why I do certain things. I just don't question my own intuition or the, I don't know, science or something I want to do. I'm just saying, boom, it's my way. I will be doing these things my way, because it's only one way that I know. Okay, Europe and the theater. This is crazy. Now, everybody, please listen before I will play commercial, because I cannot forget to play very important commercial on our show. But we need to wrap it up, the first segment of our discussion. Now, Europe, you already are dreaming to becoming actor, and you think you want to be producing the shows, yes? You want to be a director? You want to write the plays?
I think actually playwriting was the main goal. I always first, really, really wanted to write.
I said, okay, somebody else will be doing the directing, or you had this in back of your head?
Actually, I was working as a waiter in London under the table, and I asked the owner of the bar if I could refurbish the basement into a theater so that I could do my first play there. It was something I'd written like a year before, and the idea was put to me by another director. I met a director, and I said, "Hey, will you direct my play?" And he said, "Look, you know, you'll learn more if you just direct it yourself. So, cast some actors." He gave me a few pointers, like where to go to find actors, use this space in the basement, and I did. I found the actors, I renovated the space, and that was my first play.
Okay, I wanted to play commercial, but you don't let me, because I need to talk to you about something again. He again skipped so fast over some
very
beautiful, beautiful moment in your life. I want a movie about your life already. People, whoever are listening, you start writing your life story, because it's just very cool, colorful, and I can visualize almost everything what you are saying. Hopefully everybody can do these things with me. Imagine, he's now in London again. He's like 6 foot whatever. How tall you are?
6'3".
Blonde, curly hair, beautiful man. Okay, he wants to be whatever he wants to be. He's in London. He's just waitering. But you know what? What he thinks, he makes proposition to the owner. I can build a theater under your pub, whatever it was, yes, place that you were waitering. Mm-hmm. Who offers stuff like that to the owner? And the owner says what? Yes?
Well, he was paying for the space. He wasn't really storing anything in it. And there were other possibilities, for example, using it as a stand-up venue.
Yeah.
But something needed to be done with it. So he offered to pay for the materials in return for letting me use it for free to do that show.
I just love it, you know, because you're making your life, making your world. And that's so, to me, is a success story, because everybody can dream. Everybody can study. Everybody studies around me too. Everybody study, another study. But nobody wants to do stuff, you know. It's like, you're doing your way, whatever the way is. And that's accomplishments that when I am standing next to you or listening to your life story, I'm like, check, he did this. Okay, he did this. Okay, he finished that. That's a lovely, lovely, lovely thing. People, do you agree with me? But right now, we need to also play commercial, because we cannot forget about Bang, who is very, very special. This is it's called Polem, and obviously has some things to do with Polish people who are living here. It's a very special bank who helps a lot of culture events, a lot of artists, and just cares about us and cares about Accent On. Then we would love to everybody know about this commercial, about this union bank, Polem.
How would you like to own a financial institution? The Polem Federal Credit Union is a member-owned financial institution that serves exclusively the Southern California region, with offices in Los Angeles and Orange. Like banks, Polem accepts deposits, makes loans, and provides financial services. The credit union is federally insured by the NCUA and is an equal opportunity lender. Unlike banks, Polem is nonprofit, which means better rates and lower fees, as well as great personalized customer service. After all, when you're a member, you're also an owner. We'd love to hear from you. Visit us at polam.org. Polem Federal Credit Union, bringing the charm of Europe to Southern California.
That's for sure. I just need to bring somebody from the bank. They are so sweet and so gentle. They just don't come. They just, they're great. They know people know about them, and we want to even more people know about this bank. But eventually they need to come here and just answer some questions. I think so. Okay, coming back to Joshua. Joshua is so sweet. He said, okay, talk also about Carolina. I know. Carolina is our all guests. They already know a lot about her. People can go back and just listen to our show. But of course, we'll give Carolina a little time. What's new?
Well, besides the fact that I meet interesting people like Josh.
Yes. Now we know him.
Now you know
Very
him.
Very cool.
I still play. I still try to organize more concerts for my CD that we were talking about 6 months ago.
Yes. Great sound. Could you describe the sound of your CD? What you wanted to accomplish?
Well, I would say that the whole CD is quite mellow, and it paced itself in a way that everyone in and every generation can find something to themselves. Those are all songs from a period of World War II, except of two of them. And then most of them are in English. One is in Polish, one is in three languages, including French. And I had a few interviews about it with some talk shows over the East Coast in New York and area. And I'm really pleased that they like it and they kind of hear a little bit of Frank Sinatra or Doris Day in my voice. And yes, that's a very big compliment.
Beautiful, warm, very elegant city. Beautiful city, you know, we were both spending New Year together.
Yes.
It was so, so much fun. And I just love you. I love your music. I think it's very artsy. I think we need CDs like that. We need artists like you very, very much so. We need the divas, although you probably don't feel like you're supposed to be the one or supposed to call you this way, but in a very good way. You just are a very beautiful, elegant lady, and your voice is so charming. Of course, we'll be playing your music, and we have one summertime. You know, they're very
I'm
long.
I'm really ready for summertime.
Yeah, we are too. And I would love to play maybe first. Then second, you send me track 4. What is the title? Track 4.
Track 4 is from my new CD.
Track 4.
Yes, Songs of Hope. And the title of the song is I'll Never Smile Again.
Oh, okay. We don't believe you, but we'll be playing this song also. Okay, summertime. We know summer is now LA for sure, whole year.
Morning, you're gonna rise up soon.
daddy and mama standing by.
6 minutes of perfection. So, so good. I'm like, oh, no, no, I cannot do this. I just, everybody needs to enjoy this. Just perfect track,
thank
I think, for our interview, for your life story, and for our weather. And, of course, Karolina Naziemiec, you're amazing. Again, name of the album?
Introduction. And arrangement was written by Peruvian guy, And I met him at USC, and he was playing trumpet. And once he was doing it on a trumpet, and I was like, wow, I never wanted to record Summertime after Ella Fitzgerald and everyone, but this arrangement is so different and so cool that I decided to do it. And his name is Gabriel Alegria, and now he has Afro-Cuban sextet, and he lives in New York, and pretty successful.
Beautiful, really, really beautiful. Okay, coming back, it's 2000 right now. We are in London, and Joshua, I know we have 16 more years to talk about. I know that you'll be back, because obviously we cannot tell everything about you, and I really want to, because you're really, really a special man. Then, but we need to fast forward to 2016, and then maybe we'll come back to 2000, okay? 2016, 16 years later, okay, we have great things going on right now for you in Hollywood. And first, let's describe what is so important right now in your life.
So I just had a play open a few days ago at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. It's called Washed in the Blood. And it deals with a school shooting, the aftermath of a school shooting. So that's actually, there's three more performances this month as part of the festival. There's a possibility that we may extend the run. But for right now, I'd just really like to invite people to check it out. You can visit the website at www.washedtheplay.com. And there's still tickets available for the next three performances.
Again, dates?
So the dates are...
I have, of course, I listed everything on it. That's okay. Accent on, just go back.
Carolina has a flyer, but I didn't think to bring
it. No, of course.
So it was, that's great, thank you. So it was. It's tomorrow at 7 p.m., Friday the 17th of June at 7:30 p.m., and Friday the 24th of June at 9 p.m. And this is at the OMR Theater. That's part of the complex on Theater Row in Hollywood, Santa Monica Boulevard, 6476 Santa Monica.
Tomorrow at 7 p.m., everybody, remember, again, one more time, the place.
So it's at the complex, 6476 Santa Monica Boulevard, Hollywood, California.
And I would highly recommend it. I saw it already, and it's really impressive.
I know, things that are going on right now in America and all around the world, and you know, the just terror and shooting, and topic is pretty important for everybody. Everybody probably would like to know your take on this topic. Could you tell us a little bit more about the play?
Mm-hmm. So really the play isn't so much about school shootings as it is about a personal struggle with questions of faith. What the play really deals with is a young man who's put in a position where he has to either confess that he's a Christian and be killed, or say that he's not, deny his faith and survive. So it's a bit like the story of St. Peter, where he denies Christ or something like that, and then later he has to deal with his feelings of guilt. On one level, it's that, but on a deeper level, what it's really, what I see it as kind of Pascal's wager. You've probably heard of it. The Pascal, the French philosopher, he put the question to people that if you believe, you know, if you believe in God and God doesn't exist, then you lose nothing. But if you don't believe in God and He does exist, then you lose everything. I've always had a problem with that idea. I was raised a Christian myself, but that always seemed like a bit too neat of a package for me. And what this play kind of does is it shows you a counterexample, a case where you have everything to lose if you believe in God. And if it turns out, for example, in this play that God doesn't exist, then this character has lost everything and the play is a tragedy. But if God does exist, then the play is a comedy and it actually worked out for the better. So there's a kind of ambiguity to this play, and there's a, what I really want people to think about is the high price that you pay for your beliefs. What, you know, how far would you be willing to go to profess something that you hold to be true? And is there really any, really is, and the question in the flyer is, would you die for your beliefs? It doesn't have to be religion, it could be anything. Are there things that that you consider worth dying for, that that are purely like of an intellectual nature, like if I confess Like if I denied my country or burned the flag to save my life, is that something I'd be willing to do? There's plenty of situations where you would find yourself confronted, where you can imagine yourself confronted with doing something that was against your ethics, but that really had no consequences beyond your own sense of self-worth and your belief in yourself. Would you do those things? Wouldn't you? That's kind of what I want people to answer, and that this play sort of takes a character through that.
Wow. Now people understand the depth of your mind. I know this is the play that you chose for the reason. You know, it's something very important for you. I'm trying to steer people to this point to understand that outside of being not only a Marine actor, then now you are writing your plays, that you are producing. You're a philosophical gentleman, and this didn't happen like from, or you woke up one day say, oh, I have this deep need to understand what is the world around me like and understand the questions that are in me, or you always were a deep thinker?
Well, actually, I think what happened was I was very religious as mm-hmm. a kid, and that continued throughout my service in the Marines. I actually got much more religious while I was in the military, just because when you're in a very stressful, dangerous environment, you tend to resort to faith and religion.
Is this because of escape, or this is about asking for help, or this is for being just saint? What did you need religion for when
actually,
you were there?
It started in boot camp. In boot camp, they asked if someone wanted to be what's called a lay reader, which is a person who leads prayer at the end mm-hmm. of each night in mm-hmm. the platoon. And as I said, I'm impulsive, and I just sort of volunteered. I wasn't really religious anymore at that point. I volunteered, and then I started to sort of take the whole thing seriously. And I think it was something to hold on to in an environment where you're sort of being stripped of your identity. It was a piece of my identity that couldn't be taken from me, and so I clung to it for that reason. Hmm.
Okay, but you know, like 2005 or 2004, you wind up in Poland. And you were studying philosophy mm-hmm. in Krakow, in one of the oldest college in Europe, in the world, really, and one of the most prestigious colleges. Again, I don't even know how to jump from 2000 when you were waiting the tables and then creating theater, you know, and just doing something, because you also had a play there in this theater, yes? And what was the name of the play in 2000? I'm just going through your bio.
It was called Rules of Ownership. It was a farce about the art world.
Okay. And then you decided, okay, England, bye-bye. I have Poland now, you know, on the map. I need to just decide to speak Polish, learn this language. I just want to hug you because this doesn't happen so often. You didn't speak Polish before.
No.
My gosh. And then how does this pop up into your head? I'm not saying that you would like to take a study in the oldest college in the world, and one of the most prestigious, and now speaking Polish to me so beautifully, people. I would love you to, all of you, to listen to how well he speaks Polish. It's amazing. How does this happen? Man, you're getting a genius. You really are. I know you're sweet, but
thank
you
are.
Thank you,
Lonnie, very sweet. There's two questions. The first thing is how did I end up in Poland in the first
place?
And the first that happened because I do have like a Polish great grandfather and a great grandmother. My great aunt traveled in Poland in the 80s. She met like Lech Wałęsa, and so there was always this Polish connection. My mother didn't speak Polish, but she kind of brought us up with a sort of an awareness of our Polish roots. And when I went to Europe after the Marines, she was insisting that I go and visit my Polish relatives. I really didn't have the intention of going to Poland necessarily, but I went. I fell in love with the country and with a Polish girl. And so I ended up staying there.
Did she hurt your feelings? How do you hurt her feelings?
Well, I don't know if I want to go into that too much, but we were together for quite some time.
Okay.
So that was Poland, right?
Yes. Okay, but you were in Poland in Lublin. What time?
I was in Lublin. Yeah.
In Lublin.
So I have so many
great friends from Lublin, and one of them will be composing from tomorrow for next 3 weeks. Adam Abramek. Hello, he's back and will be writing a lot of music. He's from Lublin, and I have a lot of great artists from Lublin who are coming to the show. It's a great town. It produces a lot of great people. Lublin. Okay. you visited Lublin, you fell in love with this town and my country. We love him, yes, Karolinka, we love him for that so much. And of course, Polish girl took his heart. We love the girl who did that to him. Yay, girls. But now you decide to study philosophy.
No, actually, that was years later.
Oh, hello. So. Okay, then please take us, like, fast forward, because you'll be back, promise. Will you be back?
I mean, I can quickly sort of take you through the steps.
What I did
was I went from Poland to London, mm-hmm. and that was when I was working. Then I went from London to Alaska because I wanted to
I wanted
to earn money over the summer as an Alaskan fisherman to go back to Krakow and be able to write a novel about Cuba. So
okay.
I did that. I got a fishing job in Alaska. I was fishing on a five-man seiner in the summer, and then I took that money to Krakow, and I wrote a novel about my experiences at Guantanamo Bay. I went to New York in 2000, right around 2001, to sell the book, and which I got a job. Then I got a job in New York. My first day there as a temp at a trade union, and then I ended up working for them for 2 years. As a database designer in the end. Yeah. So I ended up working in computers.
Take computer 360 back.
But what happened to explain how philosophy came about is it was a few months later, and September 11th happened. And I just moved to New York at that time, and it was a very dark period for a lot of people, and for me in particular, I had stopped believing in God at that point. I was no longer religious, so the number of questions that I had just increased exponentially, and I found myself unable to deal with that, and so I just decided that what I needed to do was to just study philosophy, and I thought that the best approach would be to take my GI Bill that I had gotten from the Marine Corps. It's like a scholarship that you get for serving in the service.
Wow.
I took that money and I went to study at the Jagiellonian University in Krakow. So,
how did you learn Polish? This is so hard language.
I studied. That's one
thing. Yeah, philosophy.
I never really studied it formally. I had a little bit of formal training while I was already at the university. I was a year living in Lublin, as I said, and I also, incidentally, along the way, I married a Polish girl, and we lived together in New York for 2 years. So we were together for 2 years in New York. We spoke mostly English, but as time went on, I started to learn more Polish. So there was definitely that. And then when I went to the Jagiellonian, my first semester, they just kind of cut me a lot of slack the first semester because I was just starting out. They let me take, for example, they let me write my papers in English. They let me take oral exams in English. And then within a year, I was fluent enough to just be able to do everything in Polish.
So beautiful, so beautiful. And okay, you were studying philosophy, but could you tell us your theme? How you call this?
So my master's thesis in the end.
Thank you. That's English.
Sure.
Well, thank you.
So I ended up writing a master's thesis about Kant and his views on space, which probably has nothing to do with the sort of things that I was interested in
religion,
when I first started studying.
Of course.
I think most of my problems were solved by the time.
Was that your choice to write about that?
It was absolutely my choice.
Wow.
Honestly, I don't really... trying to remember what it was that prompted me to write about that in the first place. I became very interested in the philosophy of science.
Okay.
And I was going to Berlin. I was back and forth between Berlin and Krakow a few times to do research at the Humboldt University. And those were the philosophers, Reichenbach in particular. There were a few neo-Kantians and empiricists that were writing about these things. And somehow they offered a sort of... almost a complete package, like an answer to life, the universe, and everything, to quote Douglas Adams. And that was something that I sort of needed. So it was very rational, it was very left-brained, and it was a complete contrast to what I was doing in theater at the time, what I was interested in on the artistic realm. So I was looking for something that was... What I loved about Kant was that he offers almost like some sort of fixed principles, like universally valid truths. And I was trying to defend those truths.
Okay.
So I was trying to protect... Like, for example, what I was writing about particularly was whether or not non-Euclidean geometry as an alternative to what in Kant's day was considered the only possible geometry, whether those alternative geometries... prove that that Kant's view of space is not necessary, that that his ideas about geometry are not I'm sorry, that trying to put it in.
I'm blonde, but I try very hard to understand that. And I'm not ashamed to say we're both blonde. I wanted to learn. And I know that you need to put this in a human language for us to understand. And please do that.
Okay, so you've got a point, and then you have a line that's not on that point.
Okay.
And this is the
okay, line.
So you have
point and
right?
not
and then
at
you have a line
point.
That's not on that point. Euclidean geometry says that there's only one line that you can draw through that point that doesn't touch the other line at any point.
Of course.
For infinity in all directions. Now, you have alternative geometries that say that there are infinitely many lines, that one line crosses the other at infinitely many points, and there's others where they never cross at all, and that there is no parallels in these alternate geometries. So the question is that theorem is... According to Kant, that's something that is it's true, absolutely. It's not something that can be demonstrated with empirical evidence, but it's something that is necessarily true based on the nature of space.
Interesting. I don't want to go to the question of soul, about feelings and waves, because I will take this geometry into the people's feelings, something that you cannot measure but really exists as an energy, whatever. I know I'm probably mixing something that is completely illogical, but that's, if somebody would say study something, I will take that because I just wanted to understand this depth of us connecting without being next to each other. You know, this is just... Again, I admire you, and I hope people understand that I have many humans in front of me. You are the one, but it's so many of you in you, and that's great. I'm hoping you feel very strong about you as a human being, because you are made of few of you, and not so many people can say, oh, you know, I'm this, I'm this, I'm this, I'm that. Most people are one or two humans. You know, I am having my profession, and I'm a private person. You are researching. You are looking. You are having your love for the art. That seems like it's a main goal in your life. That's what you want to develop. That's what you are successful, and you want to be more and more successful, like every artist. Okay, it's always the next step. And again, we first and foremost, we need people to come to see tomorrow at 7 again your play one more time. Title, because that's why we are here.
It's Washed in the Blood. It's actually the title of a pretty well known song from the Baptist Church, the kind of church that I went to. Are You Washed in the Blood? That's
And we have two more dates because we have almost end of the show, and my gosh, we probably cannot play track number four. But he will be back. You will be back. I promise. We really want to talk a little bit more. And the philosophy is something that I never touched, and I want somebody to just take us there and just make this eatable, because I'm sure it is, you know, and I'm sure you can pick something from what excites you and just make this understandable for humans like me who are interested, but. Somehow I will never get there without somebody describing stuff for me. And I want to learn. And I know people want to learn, too, about what is interesting in philosophy in this type. Okay, tell me one more time. We have two more dates. We have tomorrow at 7, and we have two more dates that we need people know that they can come and see their play three more times, yes? Friday, next Friday is what the date?
It's next Friday, June 17th at 7:30 p.m., and June 24th at 9 p.m.
Okay, that's very, very good. It would be great to, of course, have you back and just describe maybe, do you have a conversation with public after play? Do they talk to you? Do you have the time to even touch? Actors can talk. That would be so much fun probably after a play like that to have an option to speak to public.
I think there are 260 shows at the festival. And basically we have 15 minutes to load in the show, and then we do the show for an hour, and then we load out.
Are you filming this?
We did film the opening night, yes.
Okay, that's cool. And what you will do with that?
Oh, I mean, it's just a reference recording. It's not something you want to watch. It's like one camera sitting in the back row.
But you assume that, but maybe, you know what? I can talk, listen to you, and you are next to me, and if somebody puts camera, I can spend another hour listening to you, and Karolinka, you too, yes? It's just, no, maybe you're underestimating power of one camera.
Maybe, but the sound is actually pretty poor. We just had it was an SLR, we just had the microphone on the camera, and the camera's pretty far away.
Can you film again?
We could, yes.
You do it.
I should.
Please promise. Okay.
I think I hesitate to film theater performances because it's always such a letdown compared to the actual experience of being in the theater. I just use it as like purely as a reference for directing. But
I hate
to watch it because then it just makes me feel.
I understand, but how many artists do not like to watch their own live performances, and people just love it? It's not about that. I think we are just judging ourselves too hard.
But I think the theater and opera, actually, it's something that it's hard to watch.
Capture the mood and the feelings. I understand.
It's better to go and see it live.
No, of course. But, you know, we have only 3 nights. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and then
well,
eternity and goes to
the
space.
Hopefully it will be more later after the festival.
Joshua.
It's part of the beauty of theater, though.
Will you be back?
Will I be back?
Yes, here to Axenon, because we have a gap between 2000 and 2016. We have a lot of, I know a little bit here and there. We capture, you know, your life, but you are a translator. You have so much to talk to us about another side of you, because you are translating books, yes. And I need to talk to you about that. That's your main business. You are making money working this business. And I think people need to know. Who knows who listens to our show? And trust me, when I write book, and my English is funky, and I have my own show, I need you to put this in a logical form that people can read.
I don't actually translate. I have translated some articles and books, but mostly what I translate is I do a lot of technical things.
Yes.
So once again, computers keeps rearing its head in my life. I can't seem to get away from it entirely. So I do a lot of like German technical translation. I do some things for like the Theater Institute in Warsaw. So some theater related things, but it's mostly technical at this point.
Honestly. Oh, okay. Okay. No, we need to know that too. We need to pitch this side of business. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming, and I'm hoping people will come and watch your play. Carolina, I love you for introducing us to Josh. Josh, again, if you can introduce yourself one more time.
My name is Joshua Krohn, and thank you so much for hosting me here, Ilona.
You're a really, really interesting guy, and I hope people found you really very interesting too, and we would love to know more about you and maybe even about your family. Maybe Daddy will call us. And we'll find out something unusual about his business. Is he still working the same business, or he's retired?
He's in semi-retirement right now.
Okay, good for him.
He is kind of looking for something that's music related and computer related, because he's a musician himself.
So. Oh, brother, daddy, and something is cooking, yes?
Oh, yeah.
And the voice. Oh, boy. I love you people so much. I need to say bye-bye, because they will be not happy with me if I don't. Thank you. And next Monday, I'll be here and we'll be having great guests. And see you then.
You're listening to Accent On with Ilona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.